Hey, my name is Kevin Clark. I'm the host of a new football podcast called Slow News Day. I want to tell you about it. On Mondays, Lindsey Jones and I will recap the weekend in football that was, as well as look ahead to what's next. On Wednesday, the normal Slow News Day, the thing you've been watching for years, current players, current coaches, current analysts talking about the football world. And on Friday, it's a wild card. Could be some college football, could be more pro stuff. It's a video podcast, so you can watch it on Spotify or listen to it wherever you get your podcasts. Follow on Spotify. It's Slow News Day.
Hi everyone, welcome to Righty's House. Hope you are all safe and well. Today we're going to talk about Emma Raducanu and the negative coverage of young athletes. The WSL's return, Fulham's win over Chelsea. We're going to look ahead to the North London and Manchester derbies in the Premier League. And my guests are Mayowa Quadri and Flo Lloyd Hughes. How are you guys?
Good.
Everything cool?
It's all right. It's all right. Back in the house, can't complain.
Back in the hills.
Mo is fresh from being behind enemy lines
fresh.
At Fulham-Chelsea, but we're going to talk about that game later. look quite scarred from the experience.
Man, scarred, bro. That's what I can't wait to see this morning.
If you don't laugh, you will cry. So laughter
times are tough.
But we will get into it because I've got to say, our guy, you know, man came and brought. But hey, we have to start with the Emirates artwork, man. I went there the other day and, you know, it's one of those, again, like, I just love the way Arsenal do these things, man, because they could have easily, right? They could have easily just like found a company, artwork company, did it, no consultation with the fans, nothing, everywhere. And they just really, they got it so right. Honestly, when you see the artwork, it's so brilliant. It's so well thought out. The artist, everybody, and they brought everybody. Everybody that's had anything to do with Arsenal, whether you played, worked, or was in that room in some capacity, and they were all people were all represented in that respect. It was like so good, man. You know, see George Graham. It's really weird looking.
Do you still call him?
Absolutely.
Like, yeah.
never change.
Yeah, it's the same. You know, it's the same with Steve Coppell. It's the same with Glenn Hoddle. And it's the same with George Graham, and it's the same with the boss, Arsene Wenger.
Oh, so when you see them, does it make you feel like young when you see them?
It makes you feel like you're back in and around them. And it's like when the teacher's coming down the corridor, man, you fix up. It doesn't matter where I am. If George Graham or Steve Coppell enter the room, I feel it. And I just fix up. I just go back to, you know when I was with them. But like, back to the artwork, it was amazing. Have you seen it yet?
You've seen it, really nice.
I'm not joking, man. They really,
it's
really
beautiful.
Got that right, man.
And I know people who attended those meetings
and consultations
in the lead up to it. And you're right. I think Arsenal were very sort of specific and very deliberate in how they wanted to bring everyone in that conversation. And obviously, I don't really know the specifics of how the original wrap was designed when the stadium opened the first place. But I do think, and you'll know better than anyone, Ian, there has been a shift culturally within the club to bring the fans in on
Absolutely.
Decisions more. Even though there is still a bit of tension around the ownership, they've realised from like a hierarchy perspective, we need to bring the fans in. And I don't know how much of the original sort of decisions for that stadium include the fans, but it seems like they were like, we're just doing this. And they were great still, but it was very much focused on the players, the icons, and not the community.
What I love about Arsenal is, for a club that's such a global, worldwide club, in recent years, it's managed to galvanize this feeling that a local club would have.
Yes.
That no matter where you are in the world, if you're an Arsenal fan, you feel like it's your local club.
Yes.
Like the way everyone speaks by, even the small details of having all of those flags on the side on one of the panels, it's just, the connection is there. And it's just a beautiful thing that a club can be so big, so massive, so global, but you feel really connected to it.
It's very much one.
Yeah.
It's very much at one at the moment. And when at the Oxford game, I interviewed Mikel, and he's just full of energy. He's just very buzzy. You know, he comes in, does stuff, very serious face, bam, gone. But like, one of the things that you could see where his face shifted and his whole demeanor changes when I said to him, So, Mikko, when you came, you recognized in one of his first interviews, I said, in one of your first interviews, you mentioned that you have to reconnect with the fans. You have to reconnect with the fans. And he said that this was, when I got there, this was my biggest job. Mm. He said, this was my biggest job. And they've done it now, Ashburton Army. They're doing it. We just need them to, just more noise, because the guys are going to need it now. This
more
is when
than
the
ever.
Guy, more than ever, they're going to need it now. But then it's something that Arsenal have always tried to do, is stay connected with the community and bring them into something that was, let's face it, it was about the players and the past and so-called and the icon and the people who have played, but you could feel that the fans felt that it was theirs. It's, they're part of it as well. And that is what they got absolutely bang on.
Also, when you're not winning a lot, and I know this from the football team I support, that's when you need your community and the fan base the most. Because that's when you need to know, make them feel loved, make them feel acknowledged, because they're not just going to turn up because the team are winning. You've got to bring them in the door somehow, and they've got to feel like they're part of something.
To be honest, it's a good time for them to be doing anything like that as well. But I saw, you could see, they had a video of the process and the people that was there. And I think to myself, wow, that must have been so intense to get everything right.
But credit, because they
credit to them.
They've everything I've seen from Arsenal in recent times. You look at it and you go, it's perfect.
Can't fault that.
You can't fault it at all. From the community activations to the meanings behind kits and releases to this, everything just makes sense. And it's funny because obviously Ryan was speaking. It's like, it feels good that Arsenal are doing everything right.
Absolutely.
I mean, if only my club could do that. But that's
don't
a conversation.
Worry, man. We'll send a blueprint. We'll send a blueprint. You know something? I saw it in the group, the article in the group, Emma Raducanu, and I thought to myself, you know what? I don't want to read it. I'm not going to read it because I don't think this is going to end up well.
Off the headline alone.
Not going to end up well. And not only did I read it, but then I made the biggest mistake. What was the biggest mistake? Read the comment.
Oh, never read the comments. Never go into the comments.
And I'm not joking, because at some stage I'll talk about it. But I mean, like, when I saw the stuff that they brought back, some of the articles and what people were saying about me, I was welling up. And listening to, reading the piece and then reading the comments, I started welling up again, because I'm thinking to myself, I don't know what it is with this country, why they hate young people so much. What Emma Raducanu did when she won the US Open from the qualifiers, it's something that, what can you equate that to, Flo, honestly, in respects of?
It's like an FA Cup qualifier, like going from the preliminary round to the FA Cup to Wembley and winning the whole thing.
I think it's like, it's literally like one of us managing to represent our nation just one day racing and beating Usain Bolt in the Olympic finals.
You know, somebody has plucked out real Rocky Balboa vibe, plucked out. But what she done is something, and representing England, actually, let's face it, in respects of England and English tennis and British tennis, she's done the miracle. And you know what? In world tennis, what she done was miraculous. Now, when you see the negativity, and everybody was loving her, everybody's loving what she's doing and that, and the negativity to her, remember, still growing, still trying to find herself, still training, because what she's done again is unprecedented. And so, of course, you are going to get brands involved. Why wouldn't you? You're young, you've got to cash in on that, because that's what it's about. People, I genuinely believe that people really think that she should play tennis and that's it. Nothing else. It doesn't work like that. And even with the brand work, what she does, the excuse for people using it, saying, oh, she's the Porsche and the Tiffany and it is and that, she's not concentrating. In some of the comments, they were talking about the bumps on her face and stuff like that. Talking about her, talking about the dad, and oh, the dad's too busy now. They've got to get the dad out of it and that. This is the same thing what they said about Richard Williams. You know what I mean? How can you separate those two? How can you separate the fact of what they're trying to do? A young girl who's done something that I don't think we'll ever see again, right? And she's done it. And the hate is wrong. You read the piece, right, Flo? You know what I mean? The piece is so negative and pointless for me. why can't they big the young people up? Why can't you big up somebody like Emma Raducanu so as people can see what she started and she's gone, she went out of the stratosphere, she went supernova. But then there's got to be a coming back to earth with what's there. She's had injuries, she's doing her stuff, but what has that got to do with endorsements? What's that got to do with injuries? Why are we not giving her the maximum amount of support we can give this young girl who's still developing? It's so sad, but you know, you expect it now. You expect it from the media, journalists and the public. The people themselves, what was the saying my mum used to say? When the monkey can't reach the grip, him say it's soa. Mm. Right? So that translates as when a monkey cannot reach the grape, he says it's sour, right? Mm. That is what those are the people that are constantly going at this 20-year-old girl. I just pray to God she gets through it. I don't care how many coaches she picks. That's her and her dad's and their family's problem. I don't care how many coaches she picks just to get it right, because I don't believe that's a flash in the pan. Like even the guy was saying it, a one and done. Mm. You know something? Even Flo Mayo, if that's a one and done, and that's I could choose, I'm fucking taking that.
I think it's the surveillance of it all as well. It's like certain publications have spent, ever since she won that competition, just documenting her every move. The girl breathes and we hear about it. Like, let her be an athlete. And I also think what's bizarre about the way that she's been treated is that tennis hasn't learned any of the lessons from Naomi Osaka, who, yes, congratulations to her, she recently announced that she's pregnant. Wow. She's deliberately taken time off sport because she basically said, you guys made it miserable for me.
Yes.
And Johanna Konta, the same thing. She retired very young and she said, like, the British media were a big part of the problem there. It's like, don't, like,
Heather
learn
Watson
the lessons.
Had a few issues as well.
And yeah, we were talking in the WhatsApp group, me and you, Moira, about the fact that we were actually, like, pleasantly surprised about how English media reacted to England dropping out of the World Cup. Whether that's because the news cycle moved so quickly because the Premier League was around the corner, who knows? There was a bit of Southgate out chat, but generally it seemed to be less toxic than usual. But the same can't be said for lots of other sections of the media and lots of other way that young British athletes are treated.
Why is it, Flo? Why is
it's because they become celebrities. And people are fascinated with their lives, and therefore the media need to
perpetuate and find something
and fill the beast. This because exactly. they need clicks around it, because they know, right, everyone is talking about Emma Raducanu. We need stories about her. We need to know what she's doing. And then this whole narrative around her coaches then became a story that people were constantly trying to keep updated with, is what will she do next? Who's going to be her coach? And it just kind of is a vicious cycle.
Flo, I think you've just hit the nail on the head there. Yeah. It's about when it's no matter, from what I've seen in terms of British media and young talents. Within football, what you have is they pick you up, they pick you up, they pick you up, they pick you up, they pick you up. You get to the top, we don't like that.
Mm.
We're going to pick you against someone else and we're going to pull you down. Mm-hmm. We've seen it with every wonder kid that's come up through British football. Here, the situation where this is so stark is because this is someone that achieved the impossible.
Impossible,
put
bro.
British tennis on the map again. And when I think about British tennis, I think about how with Andy Murray, it was sort of like, oh, great. And then when it didn't go right, he's Scottish. That's peculiar. Or when it was like, oh, okay, well, he's achieving what they're doing. No, he's not. He only got two or three and the rest of them got loads. But they always try to bring people down for some deliberate reason. But the reason why it hurts more is because when we break it down, if someone came to my job every single day and had surveillance on me, I'd be like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Whether we like it or not, that is her job. Yes, she might get loads of endorsements, stuff like that. That is her job. She's 20. She's not been in that workplace for a long time yet. She's still going to progress and do great things. Why are you so fascinated about what she does in her job? And it's because people have this luxury of being able to see sports athletes all the time, that they feel like they have the right to judge and speak on every single thing. That's her job. Like, the nature of her job is that sometimes you be great and sometimes you won't be great. That's why you go through seasons. Same with us. We're not always going to be great out of jobs, but who gives the right to sort of slate her for her?
I really can't stand that human trait in certain people. And it's like I said about the saying, what my mum used to say, is people that can't do themselves, they just criticise. And it's people who can't achieve it themselves, they just criticise. I could never look at somebody doing something, no matter how old or young they are, and and feel negative towards them, like to the point where I have to write into a comment and be that nasty about her skin, about what she looks like, about her forehead, about whatever. With me, you read what the narrative and what they were trying to build for me while I was playing. And it was horrible to read, because I wouldn't read the newspapers those times. And that's all I'm hoping, is that she's not able to see those things, or people keep those things away from her. Because if you read them, I read some of them, and they hurt.
Mm.
Because for some reason, they just push that narrative of the pantomime villain continue, just one bad all the time. And when you read it and it continues like that, it breaks you down. You know what I mean? And like, I blasted through it, but like, I was angry all the time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? To the point where I was like, I'm angry all the time. You know, even to the point where in interviews, I say to people, I have to play angry. And it's not that I have to play angry. It's only because the narrative on me is even if I score a couple of goals, they're going to find, oh, Ian Wright had an altercation with the referee, or Ian Wright had a bust up with a player. Ian Wright said something to the fans. It was always bringing you down. And the point I'm making to her and her people is, please do not let us see these things, because it's so hurtful.
You've just made it click for me in what you've said. And I never ever saw that side of it. But imagine being in a situation where you know the truth, and from a global perspective, a narrative is being painted about you.
Mm.
And naturally, because you don't want that narrative to be true, your behavior almost feeds into that narrative. It's like, it's almost a lose-lose.
Yeah.
And that's why, like you said, it's important to have the right people around you that kind of keep you away from that. And almost in a way, like Naomi Dunn, owning your own narrative, like loads of these athletes have their own platforms now where they're able to speak and put out the actual truth, to make sure that the people that are close to you and true to you as you, who you are, know that that is not the actual narrative.
Exactly.
All the stuff they're putting out there is not the truth, because looking at that headline alone, anyone that knows that that is just farcical. It couldn't be any further from the truth. And it's a shame that someone that's done so much greatness for not only this nation, the sport of tennis, which was dying in this nation as well, let's be real, is being treated like that.
Yeah, but the thing is, when you look at the headline was Emma Raducanu is in danger of becoming a one and done champion. And I think to myself, again, that is such a horrible, spiteful, nasty headline. You could actually, with what she's going through and how it's going for her, you can actually, why not do a good piece, a piece that can inspire her, that you can probably, she can say, I remember, I was going through a bit of time where, you know, we had to change coaches again. You know what I mean? I was a bit injured. I wasn't feeling really great. I was training like I would train all the time. And I read this article by this guy, and it literally made me feel like, yes. Because sometimes, of course, you want it to come from your inner circle. But why can't people just be nice enough to just say, you just keep blasting, Emma. You earn that bag. You take that bag and you go again. You blast, you know. And if it's meant to be for you to go on and be one of the greatest we've ever seen, then that will happen. But if it's not, you know, your moment was amazing and you have to take full advantage of it. People should recognize that and not hate on people so hard, man. It's so sad to read, it was. WSL back this weekend, massive game coming up. I'm gutted that I'm not at the game, because I've got to do the games. But like, big weekend and big news, Gilly Flaherty.
Yeah, big news this week. One of our counter press team, Gilly Flaherty, announced her retirement from football. A legend of the game. She recently surpassed Jill Scott's WSL appearance record. So that's her with her 176.
She's playing girl.
For Liverpool at the moment, and she's played for lots of different clubs. She was at Arsenal for a very long time. She won the UEFA Cup with them. She's won 4 WSL titles, 7 FA Cups, and that UEFA Cup win with Arsenal. And I think you always know how much a player means to people when they announce their retirement, and there's such an outpouring on social media. And I think maybe Gilly herself, it wasn't sure how much of a reaction it was going to be. And it was really sad for her, because her dad died suddenly before Christmas. And she mentioned in her statement that that's kind of, you know, been one of the reasons that she wanted to retire. Right. She didn't plan to, but it was a time for her where she really wants to be with her mum and get through this really difficult time with her family. So, we're going to be talking about next week on Counter Press, but certainly, you know, she's someone that needs her flowers for so much time in the game. Mm. And we're seeing a lot of those kind of first generation legends of the WSL hang up their boots recently.
Yeah.
Jill Scott, Ellen White, Farrah Williams, yes. Anita Asante. So this is a real kind of one of those legends, one of those icons, the Jedi Council of the WSL.
Yes,
man. Another member. So yeah.
I just hope that as time goes by, there's the next stage for them. You know, with everything with the fight and to get to where they are, and now, let's face it, it's starting to happen.
With the broadcast stuff, it's been massive because before that, for the generation before them that retired, there just weren't opportunities unless you became a coach or you know, moved into like development or something like that. There weren't really a lot of opportunities. So I think this generation, everything's changed because there's Sky, there's BBC, there's other work that they can do, which is massive. So, you know, I'm sure Jilly's going to go on to do lots of things. And obviously she's part of our counter-press squad. So.
Flowers some for praise Jilly. Of her as well. Yes, I mean, with what you mentioned, like ultimately it's great that she's able to even be in a position where she can say, you know what, I want to take that step. Yeah. So thoughts and prayers with her and the family at time. Nice, but ultimately, man. Like, an amazing player, one of the only English players to win a UEFA Cup as well. People often forget that not many have actually done that. So credit to her, like you said, being a pillar. Like, she would have walked to so many other players can run. So again, like, I think about, you know, the success that's happened recently. All the ballers you mentioned hadn't taken those steps, we wouldn't see this. So
absolutely,
credit to her and everything she's done. And this is just the beginning. Like, her career doesn't stop here. There's so much that can come for it. So be exciting to see what she does. And of course, we get to hear with you as well. So
nice one, Jilly.
Good stuff.
Flowers for you. Arsenal Chelsea at the Emirates. I think it's 47,000. Talking to Julia from Arsenal, at the artwork do. And it's like nearly 50,000. They want 50,000, but I think this is a
big game.
It's a big game.
It's a big game.
And you know what I love about this game is that obviously because we haven't got so many teams in the league, and it almost reminds me of Celtic and Rangers vibe, right? Where this game is defining for both of them, simply because we saw with Arsenal losing against Birmingham, literally like lost them the league.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And, you know, playing against the one of the big rivals, you know, Emma versus Jonas. You know what I mean? I think Wayne Rotter against Guru Wrighton is going to be unbelievable. I can't wait for that. But you have to say, for me, it's a no lose game.
It's a must win for Arsenal.
I think it is a must win.
It's a must win.
It's a no lose game. You can't lose this game.
If they lose, the league's done.
You think?
Because it's the game in hand.
It's
not the game in hand.
They would be 6 points behind Chelsea. But Chelsea would have played a game more. But the game in hand is against City. So that's a tough game in hand.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. But can you look at it and see? Because remember earlier on in the season, you know, we saw upsets. Can you see Chelsea losing games?
I can see Chelsea losing games. I don't think they're at their best yet. But I think the difference is when you are a team like Chelsea, when you've got superstars, when you've got players that are used to winning things and have won things as a group, three WSL titles in a row.
Wow.
You grind things out, even when you're not the best. And there are a lot of players this season in that team who haven't been at their best. They're players who have excelled, like Guro Wrighton.
Yes.
But I still think they can just get it done when they need to. And that's why it's going to be really hard to call. But I have a feeling, because these two teams are coming in from the cold, because it's been a month-long break since they played a competitive match nearly. They both had Champions League games just before the Christmas break. I think it is probably a good time to play Chelsea, because if anything, they won't be in their rhythm.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, because I think out of a break of everything is probably a nice time, but I think it's never a good time. But of all the periods,
someone like Emma.
Emma, I can't see that.
This is probably a good time because both these teams are out of practice. That, you know, behind closed doors, friendlies are just not the same.
Yeah, true.
But with Arsenal, they have the issues with injury.
Yes.
They have, you know, they haven't been the best, I think, this season at all. I think defensively, where they've had injuries, they have looked a little bit fragile.
Mm.
They've struggled with goals recently. I think it's going to be really tough, but I also feel like we're focusing on it being like, right, Arsenal are going to win or Chelsea are going to win. It's probably going to end up like a 1-1, 0-0 draw, and we'll be able to take nothing from the match.
Yeah, but when you look at it and you see what Jonas has had to deal with, you know, he's been brilliant, Jonas, in the way he's had to deal with Leah and Rafaela missing. And then, that's taken a lot of progression out of Arsenal. You've got Steph Catley and Lotta in there needing protection. So that kind of like takes a little bit away from the midfield because you've got to deal with that. Then you ain't got no progression from Arsenal. And then, that's earlier on in the season. Then later on in the season, you lose Viv. and you lose Beth. That's like 40% of the goals.
Yeah.
You know, and so this is where, you know, people like you, you need Steena.
Mm.
You know, you need her to kick in. You know?
I will say Arsenal have dealt well with that adversity this season. Like
Steph Catley as well.
Yeah, it's,
you know, the thing with Steph, because she's been having a great season, but now we probably need Steph to turn that form into consistently now, because obviously the goals weren't her burden, although she was chipping in with them. It's Viv and it's Steena and it's Beth. But now, in this moment, we do need her to carry on with what she's doing, because that's going to obviously help us.
It's your baseline. It's your baseline. And I remember back to the United game, the Arsenal United game, I was like, that was a big game that you need to win.
Mm.
I think back to, for me, this fixture now is the replacement of what City are coming back, of course, but the City-Chelsea fixtures for those seasons where it was like, these are the most important fixtures. Like, you, it's a must win. You have to get one up on your enemies. And I remember, I think it was the last three games, Chelsea are unbeaten against Arsenal because Emma said, this isn't happening anymore. And that's why I think coming out of this cold break may not work in Arsenal's favour, because the way Emma is and the way this Chelsea team is once we've been scarred, it's not happening again. And I think there might be a real mercenary performance by Chelsea just to be like,
wow,
you need to know your place. Like, we're going to deal with this.
But that's what's great about, I mean, I wrote a preview about this game, and that's what's great about the Jonas Idavout Emma Hayes rivalry, which ever since Jonas did that knee slide at the Emirates September 2021, Emma has had his number and she's never let it go. And there's been, you know, a little bit of back and forth, like light-hearted good stuff.
Yep.
That FA Cup defeat at Wembley where Chelsea wiped the floor with Arsenal and they completely kind of lost the plot.
Yep.
I think there's still a real, like you said, Moa, like we're not going to let this go. Yep. And if you're going to beat us, you have to get to another level that you haven't maybe quite reached this season.
Mm, yep.
And I looked at the numbers as well of how Arsenal performed at the Emirates and kind of counted back through the games. And I think I got all of them. But apart from that win against Chelsea, Arsenal have only won four times in 8 games at the Emirates.
They have to.
So that's two wins against Spurs and two wins in the Champions League, Zurich and Juventus. They lost against Lyon.
Barcelona. Oh, that was a tough one.
And they've had other poor results there as well, I think. Yeah, so it's not been actually, as much as it's become great crowds and great atmosphere, because they're playing at a big stadium, teams like Chelsea are going to be overjoyed to have that win.
You know,
Guo Ryton. Yeah. Is gonna and Lauren James are gonna be so excited with the space that they have to work with.
Well, Lauren James, you know what I mean? Obviously, we're all very excited about that. But I think that for one on one with Weinrotter, with Guru, I'm not sure she's beaten her. I'm telling you, man, I just swear. I just think that one on one, she's one of the best. You know what I mean? She's
Laura Weinrotter isn't gonna get beat by Guru, right?
I don't think she is, no.
I feel like clip that up for Tuesday's show. We'll be ready.
Take it, because like I'm putting pure faith in her. But that's the kind of performance we're going to need, because I believe that Chelsea will come there, and it doesn't make no difference what the game is. Now, how important the game is. Emma wants to. She wants to constantly suppress her and keep us down. Do not let them even see the light.
Yep.
Right. Simply because. Arsenal, if Arsenal start beating Chelsea, their chest, it comes up even more, it puffs up, your chin's up, you're ready to go.
It's like a school bully.
Exactly, what it is.
If someone challenges the bully, all the other kids think, he's not as powerful as he is.
But then what happens is that there's certain, but the thing with this bully is that this bully isn't one that's going around beating people up, but it's one that makes you, when you look at each other, I don't want to look at
them. It's the little, and then you stop
because they know that if Arsenal get it right and start beating, they will want to play them and they will be able to beat them all the time. You cannot take your... Who was it who was saying? It was Roy Keane. Don't take your foot off the neck. And that is what Chelsea have got to try and do. Arsenal have got to get over that hurdle.
Yep.
They've got to start making Chelsea know we are coming. And yes, we've got players missing, but we're coming.
Mm.
But you know, you look at Chelsea like Millie Bright. Everybody always going on about Millie. Yes, yeah, no, this is the one. Put her up against Millie and get her to run into Millie's chest. I've never seen anybody beating Millie. I've never seen anybody do it where they get the ball and go vroom past me, because her positional sense and the way she plays is so good. What we got to do with Millie is make sure that we stop her from them diagonals and stuff like that. But it's a great game. It's set up to be a great game, and it's a pivotal game. Because if Arsenal can do it without Viv, without Beth,
just picks the whole spirit up.
Honestly, it's amazing. And if I'm Chelsea, I'm saying, listen, they haven't even got two of their best players. We have to beat them in this time to make them understand.
Imagine what happens if Chelsea win. United will start licking their lips again.
Well, this is what I'm saying. Yes. If United win this weekend and Arsenal lose, they'll go into second.
Yep.
Wow. Arsenal finish the weekend in third.
Yep.
That's a pretty crazy prospect. Yep. So, well, I mean, we'll see what happens. It'll be interesting.
I think it's
going to
be a
good
game. I don't think it's going to be a dull one. I think it's going to be either 2-2 or someone's going to hurt somebody. And I don't want to say who.
I'm going 2-1 in the fiery game.
You're going to go 2-1 in a fiery game. 2-1
Chelsea in the fiery game.
2-1 Chelsea. In the fiery game. Yeah, I see 2-1 Chelsea.
Touchline bust up. Mayoma, man. Fulham, Chelsea last night.
Oh,
I watched the game.
Man.
I want to know what was happening again. I want to know what was like Craven Cottage. So
I like Craven Cottage because I think it's like one of the most beautiful stadiums.
It's iconic.
It's by the river, you know, they've got guitar players. It's a nice stroll from Putney Bridge. It's quite nice in the evening. So,
and the angle now, they do a television angle where you can see them. It's beautiful.
It's so good. So I'm going to the game and I get to the game and I'm just waiting. I'm killing time. And then someone goes, "Ain't you supposed to be in the Chelsea?" I'm one of the stewards. And I was like, no, I'm in Fulham. It's like, "No, but I watch your stuff. You're a Chelsea fan." And I was like, So, you know, I settle in.
Were behind enemy lines.
Behind enemy lines. Like, I settled in. I was there, put my glasses on, hoodie on, everything. And I'm watching the game. I see the lineup. I'm like, my Zhao. It's going to be great. I'm going to see some jinky football. No Mitrovic as well, so I thought, you know what, this could be a chance where even if we manage to win and we don't get the goal difference, we'll be level 1 points of Fulham, because we don't want to be the third best team in West London. Being second might be worth, but you know, we don't want to be third.
Hey,
so
what about being the fourth? Come on, some of us are struggling not in the Premier League.
True, you know, but you know, sometimes you might, you know, if we go down, you guys might go up. So settle in. Watching João Felix, I'm like, wow, this guy's such a beautiful player.
Yeah.
Lovely touches. He's ferocious. He's picking up yellow cards.
We were texting
about it
in the group, like, wow.
I was like, yeah, Todd, drop the money now. Just do it.
Bro.
And then
when they scored? When they scored and when you scored?
So before they scored, I looked at William and I thought to myself, he might score.
I was
surprised because... Not surprised. I know what he does. The little jinky.
That,
I know what
to
expect.
Side on that
exactly.
Right foot. Yeah.
But what I was confused about is, as per Quirk, you've trained with this guy for possibly for about 7 years, and you're still showing him the way he wants to go. It's a little bit concerning. And then he took the shot and he went in, and I thought, I know what type of evening I'm in for.
And Moira did exactly like that. Just I'm sorry.
I was like, but you know, because you're the fans, you got to stand up with them as well.
Of course
like,
you
so
do.
Like, and you got to do the little clap.
Yeah, absolutely, bro. You have to play
you
that.
You have to play the game.
And you know what? If there's a place I'm going to get caught behind enemy lines, it's Fulham.
Yeah.
Because even when we used to play against them, it's the only place you can go and pick the ball up for a throw-in or a corner, and they're not absolutely hammering you with just some... disgusting.
They're really polite.
Yeah, they're very
nice people. It's the place to be behind enemy lines. But when I watched João Felix, and you know when you hear people saying like, because I watched it just to watch him say, okay, let me see how man's gonna move. Honestly, he was exhilarating.
He's on vaults.
He was literally.
He energized the whole team, and also so quickly. He had a little partnership with Kai Havertz going.
Yes.
The way that they were playing off each other, running for each other,
flow.
Playing themselves in. It was
together.
So good. And
it was
then
obviously, he probably only trained once.
It all ended in tears when he got sent off.
Yeah, but you know what was what I took from all of that is Chelsea fans should be really pleased about that. And like you say, Todd, send the money now. Simply because he hit the ground, not only with his creativity, his pace. Did you see one time I saw him blast past Anthony Robertson?
Yeah.
Do you know funny stat of him? You know?
He took 4 shots on target yesterday.
Yeah.
And with those 4 shots, he's now 5th ranked for Chelsea this season.
In
terms of shots on target.
But the thing is, it's that,
that
we're talking
that
about not
tragic.
Only the skill, the pace,
the application.
And then to the point where he's flying into tackles. You know, like people talking about the Premier League. Listen, the Premier League's the best, right? But people talk about it like, oh, watch out, you're coming to the Premier League. He literally just scruff of the neck, bam. He could have easily scored a hat trick last night.
Yep.
But that's because he's being a caged animal. Yep. For so many years. The shackles
are off.
Did you hear
what he said? He said, I want to find happiness in football again. So to get a red card,
I hate when people
say
that. It's so sad.
It does concern me a little bit. But yeah, this has been a man in captivity and he's been free.
But this is the kind of red card that he showed us so much in such a short space of time in his first game. If I'm a Chelsea fan, I'm very, very excited about what I saw.
Oh, it's just frustrating because now you lose him for three games.
Do you know how much that red card's
going to
cost?
And you lose that energy.
That red card is going to cost
1 million or something.
I've got to tell you, because last night, I was at Patrick Vieira's. Me and Patrick were watching the game together. and I saw when, because João Felix, we're waxing. We're waxing about how well he's playing his first game. And when he got sent off, Patrick literally just got up and went to the kitchen. I like to say, yes. Patrick just get up. He looked at me, kind of like smiled at me, went to the kitchen.
No notes.
It was because, can you imagine? It was. I felt like it was such a privileged position to be in last night. I'm watching it with a Premier League manager and they're playing them. They're playing them on Sunday. And so you're seeing a guy literally, like I say, going supernova on there in his first game. Then the next one's going to be at home where the fans are going to be like, yes.
It's like,
and then man gets sent off.
Let me cross out two banks of four. What they need in that?
Well, same thing. I saw Hiltko, who had obviously had big news this week.
Yes, of course.
You know, revealing that he has cerebral palsy and massive, amazing reaction from that. But I saw his tweet on my timeline that was like, oh, really concerned about playing João Felix on the weekend. And it popped up after he'd been sent off. And the replies were so funny because it was going completely, it was like popping off that tweet. And I was like, wow.
If he carries on like that, it's a kind of a Bruno Fernandes kind of like introduction to the Premier League, simply because he literally came in and just balled. He's just like, bam. And you can see already where it's going to work out. Can I just say something where what I'm looking at and I'm saying, how can somebody be so fragile like Koulibaly? Koulibaly looks very fucking nervy, bro, and very anxious. The goalkeeper's got to, for me, he's either got to stay on his line for that cross where Vinicius,
he's
got to go through. And the thing is, with the way the cross came in, it's a good cross.
Yeah.
It's a tempting cross. But if you're a goalkeeper in the right position, it shouldn't give you a problem, because where he headed it from, Yoa, is nearly outside the post.
Yeah.
So he's going to have to get that back there. So you either stay on the line or you go and you palm it away because it was in the air long enough. I'm looking at your, like, Kepa, and I'm sorry, man. It's not working out, bro.
It's not worked.
The man makes too many mistakes.
It's not worked. And for me, there's always warning signs when someone does the basics and you go, oh my gosh, it's going so well.
Yes.
And that's what we had for 1 month. He was showing performances and he's like, maybe this is him. Maybe we're seeing it. Maybe it's coming together. And then the matches that followed afterwards, this is back-to-back games where you've made mistakes that have cost your team goals. And it's not working. With the Koulibaly one, the reason why it hurts so much is because in Rudiger, you lose this enigma, this real passion,
energetic.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, he had really bad days at Chelsea. I remember when there was a game, West Ham, where Yarmolenko, who has no pace, turned him inside out and just wrapped it bottom corner. But when he left at this peak where it was like, I'm so good, I'm going to the Galacticos.
Mm.
And you get in another centre-half who, you know, in terms of ball playing, in terms of the style of play, very similar, aggressive front foot defending, can ping crosses. And it's just not happened.
Nope.
It's like a shell of anything we saw for years. This is someone that we've been saying, can't wait till he gets a chance to Premier League. And it's not happening.
Looks very nervy,
and he's got like a four-year contract.
He looks very nervy.
When I was watching them last night, having seen them grow so much in that first performance against City in the league and think, okay, there's green shoots here. And then yesterday felt like another level up with João Felix's really good performance. Mm. But the rest of the team just looks so fragile. They look like watching youth team players play, even though some of them have like over 10 years experience in senior football. They all look like kids.
But that's why I'm so glad you mentioned that, because Cucurella came on, didn't look at it. He was supposed to sign in. Koulibaly not looking at it.
Mm.
But Kani Chukwuemeka, can I quickly say, anytime he comes, what more do you have to do to get a start?
Yeah.
Like, it can't be an experience thing anymore, because every time I come on this pitch, I look better than anyone else that was on the pitch before me. And it's just about, with Graham, I think it's one win in eight games. There's so many different things that are happening from a broader level to on the pitch to management. And it's just that for me, the season's done for us. Like, we've got Champions League, okay, cool. João Felix has a few weeks to rest and give it everything. But why not play a lot of these young players that are going to give you application and everything and find something that works? Because at the end of the day, those are the people I'm actually looking at and thinking, you look like you're actually hungry and you're ready to turn up
if
to
he,
work.
If he takes Mayowa, the thing is...
But if he does it in this moment, wrong. Yeah,
for Graham Potter, that would be a massive, massive gamble to take. And I hear what you're saying, because it needs something different to energise it, to give the fans something to get behind, so as then you can start playing well. But if he goes that far left and starts bringing those guys in and it doesn't go right, then it's not going to help him. He just needs to get a little bit more luck. Do you know something? You look at this goalkeeper, no matter what Chelsea are doing, and I look at like the goal I saw someone score against where it went right across.
Man City goal, Mahrez.
You know, when I'm looking at him thinking, you've got to do better than that. The goal yesterday, you've got to do better than that. So we're looking at a Chelsea side where even if they're playing well, I cannot, as a Chelsea fan, look at that goalkeeper and feel like he's going to help us to win a game. I can't see it.
Do you know the other side of it, though, right? That's one side of it. But with Mendy, towards the time when he came out of the squad, he was making the same
mistakes.
I don't know what's happened.
Ultimately, we always say, with like a goalkeeper, no matter who's experienced in front of that defence or the team, if in the back of your head you think, if they take a shot, they might score. Yeah. That must just deflate the whole team.
Because
so
you're afraid.
You're afraid.
We'll see how it pans out with him. Yeah. And because we've got to talk about the derbies, because we've got Manchester derby, got North London derby. You notice I said the Manchester derby first, because like, I'm just nervous. It's because, again, this for me is a game in a season where Arsenal are trying to strive, and are striving. You know, I believe, again, we must win this game. It's a home game. It's against our biggest rivals. We know that we're already going into the game 1-0 down because Harry always scores against us. So, you know, it's a game where all I want is for us to start and continue to and put the pressure on to put that defence under pressure, to put everything past that front four under pressure. Because if it gets to that front four and they start to click, they are going to cause problems. In the main, it's a game that I believe that we are going to win.
Do you know what I'm looking forward to the most about this game? Nketiah is someone, as a forward, he always scored goals. And I think a lot of that time when he first came in and he was missing the open chances, there's a lot of conversation. I think since coming after the World Cup, he's got 4 goals. I had a mate that said he would score 6 before January's done. So he's well on target to do that. But this is the sort of game where he can well and truly make people realise
really
that
sit up.
He's not a gimmick.
Because he looks like he's got the way he's celebrating the goals now, the way he's finishing, it's a meaner.
It's
happened to me. Something's happened in him where he says, yeah, I'm here and I'm the man at the moment because obviously Jesus is not playing. I'm going to play. He looks to me right now like he's owning it.
Yep. And what better way to, I remember, was it, did Saka and Smith Rowe both score in the North London derby?
Yeah.
They both scored.
Yeah.
He has the moment to own a North London derby as well. And I think he will do it. I think ultimately, Lloris, there's always a mistake in there. Romero's great, but I mean, if you look at that right side for Spurs, Emerson Royale,
he can
be gutting out. So if you get
Martinelli,
service,
he's
going to get service from that side coming in.
Yeah.
It's just about, can he put away his chances? And Arsenal's defence, I mean, as a team, everything just works so well. I think all they need to do is make sure you hit Spurs early and just make sure they don't bounce back.
That's exactly what you got to do.
No matter how bad Spurs have been this season, this whole, we're going to go 2 goals down and come back, it's kind of impressive.
It's very impressive.
It's kind of impressive.
They've got something.
Yeah, you just have to make sure that they're dealt with early. But the other derby though.
Yes. But this is one where it's almost like Man United and where they are. Obviously, it's the Manchester derby, but Man United have got a free hit there. And I don't think City are very much... it's like they're missing something in their seasoning. You know, they're seasoning it and they haven't got...
They're not invincible anymore.
No, they just don't feel, for me... Like, you know when you see those City sides where you think, this team can go on a... this team can go on a 10-game tier. Bam, no problem. I can't see it in this City side. You know, I think that if you're playing City, right now is the time to play them. And I think that... Of course, it was a cup game, but you look at the Southampton game and you have to look at these things. You have to find what's going on in that dressing room now. And what I see with City, I don't care what anyone says, the way Pep is and the way they've had to grind it out for the last, what, 5-6 years, that's wearing now. That's wearing on everybody.
It's a great point because I said the same thing about them. Them and City and Liverpool for so long when this duel, where they're going, it's like Dragon Ball Z where they're fighting for like just 6, 7, 8, 9 episodes.
In the air.
And it's like, it's got to end eventually. And yes. With Liverpool, what happened with them is they lost their press. They lost their press, they lost their identity.
Mm.
With City, they've lost this ability to suffocate you and make you suffer.
Mm.
A lot of teams that have managed to get results about them have been like, this doesn't feel as bad anymore. Like, I can move, I can wiggle, I can do something. So that's why you get a Southampton who haven't got nothing since Nathan Jones come in, managed to get 2 goals and get a result. And that's why United, although a lot of their fans will say, well, City, whenever they lose, they'll bounce back and make sure the next team's punished. This is a game where you can go in and Ten Hag can prove a point to the league that they've done really well. He is one of these quote-unquote disciples of Pep. They can really go in and say, we're not in a title charge, but we want you to know that next season we're coming for you.
But also, I think that it's shifted now. Some of the fans are talking about, actually, we could get in a title charge.
A lot of them are
quietly saying it. A lot of them are thinking that what I've seen and the results and a run we could go on, I think if they beat City, those things become more genuine.
They look so much more structured.
They've got the game in hand on Newcastle.
Yeah.
They're level on points.
Mm.
If they were to win, they go above Newcastle into third and they will be 1 point behind City.
Jesus. Of course they are. Of course. But the thing about it is that what they've got to look at is, do they believe Arsenal can sustain?
Yep.
Can Arsenal beat when they come up against United and City? Because that's what they're going to have to do, right, to win the league. They're probably going to have to beat those two teams at some stage and then you have to beat the rest. If I'm Man United and I'm looking at myself, I'm saying, you know something? No one actually is. People are only now saying, we can probably do it. Whereas you look at them and you think, Man United, in that dressing room, they will know we can do this. They know they have to do this. But the fact that they'll have to beat City.
Yeah.
They have to beat City. Then all of a sudden, Man United are in the conversation. Because what they'll say about Arsenal is, can Arsenal sustain? Can they stay? Because now, you look at it, if Manchester United beat City and Arsenal lose against Tottenham, It's starting to get to the place where people say, well, I knew this would happen for Arsenal.
Mm.
This is a magnificent time in the league. It's a brilliant time for Arsenal. It's a brilliant time for United. You know, we will find out more about City.
We'll find out about Newcastle.
This is where it starts to get into, okay, the checks have to cash, bro.
And
you have to cash them now because Arsenal have to see this out for me. It's a great season. They have to see this out in respects of top four. I'm not going any more than that. Of course I want them to win the league. But I know that they are way ahead of what they're trying to do. And they're now going to try and do a Leicester and continue to just like defy everybody and win the games and finish it off. But like United with Rashford's form, you know, and the way they're playing with Casemiro and Eriksen, the way, you know, it looks very solid. So it's very exciting. I'm very excited about it. I'm very nervous about the derby. Simply because I know that we have to win. And if we don't win, I'll take it. But it's one of those where I know that when you're going into a title challenge and you're in and around it and up there, certain games you can't lose.
But
games are games you have to win as well.
The feel-good factor of winning this particular one is it's almost what you need to start a stretch of winning streak.
Yeah, yeah.
You need it. You really need it. And of course, ultimately, as we know, you've got to get those points in the bank because when you start adding the European fixtures and everything,
yes,
it gets really tricky.
Those are the things that people would say. Those are the things that people will be looking at and equating and saying, let's see how they go because they've got they've got cup games. It starts to drain you. Mm. It starts to wear on you, man.
Mm. I'm looking forward to both games. I remember my team used to compete in such.
Yeah.
Really, really big fixtures. Super Sunday. But, you know, we'll come back soon.
Nice. So listen, guys, what can I say? It's been a blast.
Always is.
I really like that. The shirt, Crescent City. Can you tell us a story?
Crescent City is an amateur football team based in New Orleans where my brother lives. And I went to go visit him last year. And I really wanted to go watch some sport. And it was May, so there was no NBA.
Mm.
There was no NFL. So we went and watched some amateur football team. But they were terrible, like much worse than Sunday League.
Yeah.
But they had merch, so I was like, I'm going to buy the merch.
Nice.
That's a really cool jersey.
Always take some merch, man. Listen, Mayowa, Flo, I'll see you again soon.
Of course.
See you soon. See you
next
week.
See you next week. See you next week. It's been great. Okay, so thanks to Flo, thanks to Mayowa, and thanks for listening, everyone. On Tuesday, we will be doing a non-football mailbag, so tweet us your non-football questions to Write His House on Twitter, and have a lovely weekend, even if your team loses. See you next week, guys.